Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's £100 meeting. Today is Wednesday, the 20th of August, 2025, and today it's our great delight to have Lee W with us today. And Lee came into OA in January of 2022. She's originally from Derbyshire and she now lives in South London. So, Lee, it's over to you.
Thank you so much, Alan, and thanks everyone who does service at this meeting. Hi there, I'm Lee, and I'm a very grateful compulsive overeater living in recovery. Really happy to be here today. I'm a £100er, and this meeting has a very special place in my heart. It's where I found my sponsor, it's where I found my people. You're my people. So I just wanted to say special hello to any newcomers in the room. Please keep coming back. If you don't hear things in my story that you resonate with, just keep coming back because you will. You'll hear it in someone's story. And also, I always like to give a little shout out to the atheists and the agnostics. You're also my people. And the big book's really clear that atheism or agnosticism is no barrier to a spiritual experience and no barrier to recovery from alcoholism and, in our case, compulsive overeating. So also keep coming back, and I'll come back to that a bit because it's very much at the center of my own story. So first I'm just gonna kind of qualify, say what it used to be like, what happened and what it's like now. And Alan, maybe it's good if we start with the photos and get the physical stuff out of the way. I see a nice cityscape. Lovely, thank you. So this is me and my physical journey. So the top left journey is the top left photo. I'd say these are all kind of in the last 6 or 7 years, these photos. The top left is kind of normal me as an adult. I was morbidly obese. This was on a good day. I was dressed up because I was going to like the palace for a work event. So I was holding down a decent job. Things in my life, you would imagine, were in good order. But I lived in a very overweight body. I'm tall, I'm 5'9". So if I put the right frock on, as I did that day, I could kind of pull it off to some extent. I knew how to kind of hide the worst excesses of my disease, but I did live my life as a morbidly obese adult. And as you can see in the kind of second and third photos, as soon as anything got difficult, anything went wrong in my life, that would instantly show itself in my face and on my body. And the photo in the top right, it makes me a bit emotional actually, and really sad to look at it, because this was Christmas 2021 and I was at absolute rock bottom. And as much as this was the heaviest I'd been in my life, over £320 at that stage, I was also just in a deep amount of pain, really deep amount of pain. And the bottom left photo is almost exactly a year later, Christmas Day 2022. And I was on my way. I was on my journey of weight loss. I'd been abstinent then for about 10 months. I still had quite a lot of weight to release, but I will always remember my first Christmas Day in recovery, because after Christmas lunch, my son, more about him in a moment, said to me, "Oh, mum, can we go and like shoot a few hoops in the estate?" And I was about to say no, of course not, it's Christmas Day, and tell him all the reasons we couldn't. And then I realized, like, oh, there's no reason we can't, because I'm not in a food coma. I don't need to sit and get drunk for the afternoon. So yeah, sure, let's go out and like play a bit of basketball. And it was just an amazing part of my recovery. And then the next photo is me traveling across Europe last year with me and my son, who was 9 at the time. But the headshot of me is just to say something about my style and my identity, because as an overweight child and then as a morbidly obese woman, I didn't get much choice in clothes. And as a teenager, I wore flowery patterned dresses that were for ladies of a certain age and size, and I was kind of forced into them for lack of anything else. And in the past 3 years, I've been able to figure out like who I am, like what clothes I want to wear, how I want my hair, what earrings I want to wear. So that kind of just represents kind of who I am and feeling comfortable in my skin today. And the very last picture is 2 weeks ago. I was on holiday, and my sporty son begged me to go mountain biking. And actually, I just gave him a wholehearted yes. We found a bike hire centre and we went off-road mountain biking in a country park. And my body allows me to do that today. And that is an absolute miracle and a blessing. So, yeah, I think we can stop the photos. Thanks, Alan. Just to kind of give the numbers, I was £320 at my top weight. I've lost and maintained around, I'm not entirely sure, but around £120 weight loss, which is about 55 kilograms or about 9 stone, I think. And that has taken me from about a size 26 in UK sizes, I think that's size 22 in the States, to a size 16 UK, probably 12 in the States. And I maintain that weight loss one day at a time. And I think the important thing to say, especially in the 100-pound community, is that for me, no bones about it, the physical weight loss has been an amazing transformation. It's given me a life that was beyond my wildest dreams. And yet, at the same time, it's not the most important part of my story or my journey. And it's not the most important freedom that I've been granted and blessed with in this program, because the emotional recovery and the spiritual recovery kind of blow the physical out the water. And I never thought I'd say that, because I came here because I was physically broken. I knew I was kind of emotionally a bit messed up as well. I had no idea I was also spiritually on the floor, because I thought I was fine as an atheist. But honestly, those three things together have really given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. So I believe I was born a compulsive overeater. My mum tells this family story of when she was two, when I was two, sorry, she was training me to like pee on the potty. And she said within 2 weeks, I trained myself to make one pee last for five. Sorry, this is a lot of information, but I would like hold it and go five times, because I'd get a little sweet reward every time I peed on the potty. So I just learned to like make one pee last for five when I was 2 years old to get more sweet treats. And it just continued like that. And the point that sticks in my mind is my grandma. I loved her so much. She used to feed me a lot. And I was at her house after school. And I remember she gave me a plate. And even today, I remember there were eight biscuits or cookies on that plate. And I ate them all, of course, because they were there and why not? And my dad came in and he'd already started putting me on diets at this time. And I have no anger towards him. This was like the early 80s. He was doing his best with what he knew to help prevent me have the life that he was living as a very obese man at that time. So he put me on diets and we'd calorie count. So he came in, looked really mad, and he said, like, how many did you eat? And I was like, well, I think about four. And that was the start. I was otherwise a very good girl, top of my class, never put a foot wrong, but I was dishonest, and it started with the food. And I would routinely halve, say I'd eaten half of what I'd eaten. And I remember it starting at that age, and it just carried on for a long time. And the thing is, I'd lie to other people, but I'd also lie to myself. I'd convince myself I hadn't eaten as much as I had. But the truth is, I never really stopped eating. And I'd love to say actually that, and sometimes I try to convince myself that it was because life was hard. I ate when things got hard, but actually, I ate for any reason and all reasons. And again, to just reference the big book, I find Bill's story a really important chapter, because it starts with saying, like, the goose hung high, I was a war hero, and then I drank. And he has really bad times, and then he drinks. He's rich, he drinks. He's poor, he drinks. He's falling out with his wife, he drinks. He has a fight with the tax driver, he drinks. He's got great friends, he drinks. I was like that with the food. Like, I ate to celebrate, I ate to commiserate, I ate because I was stressed, I ate because I was happy at work, ate because I was stressed at work. There was any reason and no reason for my eating, and there was nothing, not one incident that I can say that turns me into a compulsive overeater. And I truly believe it's not where we came from, it's that we all have this, some shade of this disease, but here we are with a solution. So fast forward into my 30s, and that's when some of those photos that you saw started. I was pregnant with a much wanted child, and I had a heavily medicalized pregnancy because I was a bit old and very fat. And I have medical notes from scans that say there was no clear view of the fetus because of too many layers of fat. And that broke my heart. And I told myself that I would stop with the eating. I told myself I'd stop with the eating because I wanted a baby. I couldn't. I told myself I'd stop with the eating. When I got pregnant, I couldn't. That I thought that the kind of note, the medical notes would stop me. It didn't. When I had him, I was like, okay, I really need to be eating healthy now because breastfeeding and all that. Of course not. I couldn't stop eating. And this kid is like the sportiest kid. He's the absolute sunshine of my life. And he's the sportiest kid I have ever met. He started
That's
walking when he was,
enviously.
thank you, Kevin. He started walking when he was 10 months old. And the day after he walked, he ran. And the kid is now 10 years old and he's never stopped running. He never stops running. And before he was two, I realized I couldn't catch him. And we live on a main road in London, main road. And I thought, oh my God, if he runs into the road, I will not be able to save his life. There's nothing I could do to catch him because I was walking like a much older woman in a body that was too big to do the things that I wanted to do as his mum and that he just thought I could do. All he wanted to do was kick a ball around a park, play a bit of basketball, go cycling, running, all the sports that he, as he grew, all the sports that he found, he just thought we could do them together. And I couldn't do them. But could I stop eating for him? You bet your life I could not. And then things really came to a head in 2021. Because as I said at the start, I had a successful job. I've always worked on human rights and been very proud of my career. And I think my atheism was part of my identity as an activist and someone that cares about the world. I was like, atheist was really like, I felt very strongly that about atheism and being good without God and having a moral code without having a religion. I still feel fine about that. So I had a job that was going well in a human rights organization. And it was a very tricky time for, and was going through the COVID times, some very tricky things at work. And I was actor playing director again, classic textbook, classic big book, moving people around like pieces on a chessboard because I thought there was like a better world we could live in, a better situation we could create. But actually, I was creating chaos. It was a toxic environment and I was adding to it, not taking away from it. And my food was really playing out as part of that. And at some point, it all came crashing down. And I've had to work through a lot of shame on this, but I was accused of nepotism in recruitment, including discrimination. And for a human rights activist, that's pretty much cuts to my core. And as the mum of a black boy, it also really, really cut me to be like, if I'm not acting, if I'm not doing enough to support people in the workplace, I'm not enough as a parent. And I just had a total breakdown, to be honest. And a good friend of mine at work told me I was part of the problem, not the solution. And as such, she could no longer have me in her life for her well-being. And I really respect that woman for setting those strong boundaries because I didn't know anything about boundaries at that stage and I could never have set them. But she set them on me and I was absolutely heartbroken. And for 3 days, I didn't eat. I know, impressive, right? I think it was the first 3 days in my whole life that I had not eaten. I'm not a restrictor. And I, somewhere in my crazy head, I thought, oh, maybe this is it. Maybe the heartbreak of losing this friend will help me lose weight. So maybe it would be worth it. And this was that was just where my head was. Through the tears, that's what I was thinking. And then after 3 days, of course, I started eating, and it was like all bets were off. I just ate and ate and ate for 6 months solid. I ate myself into the ground. And that was hence the final picture of me at my very heaviest weight, but also just the pain in my eyes and in my soul were just immense. I couldn't see a way out. I literally didn't know where to go. I didn't know how to stop eating, and I didn't know how to continue in my job, in my life. So Christmas 2021, I was like genuinely at rock bottom on my knees and couldn't stop. And then something happened, and I honestly cannot tell you what, but this story does kind of cheer up at this point because I don't know how I found OA. I have no memory of knowing about OA. I certainly do not know how I found a Zoom code to join a meeting. I mean, they're not the easiest thing to find unless you know what you're looking for. But I somehow turned up the first Saturday of 2022, in the early bird meeting, 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and heard a main share and heard a woman talking about things she'd done with food that I thought only I did, like eating food off the floor, binging all night, hiding food around the house, eating out of bins. Anything that anyone's done with food, I've probably done. And there was someone else saying it without shame, with a smile on her face. And then I started to listen to the shares in the meeting, and that's when the God chat started. And I was like, oh no, come on now, I'm an atheist. And I thought, no, this is not going to work for me. I mean, these people look fine, they look nice, they look joyful, but it's not going to work for me because there's no God. They're clearly deluded. So I almost ran away, but thank God, and I say thank God now, as at least as shorthand, thank God I didn't, because they just had something that I really desperately wanted. They had a freedom, they had a light in their eyes. So I kept coming back. And then they started calling me. You're right, darling. How you doing? Just checking in. I'm a newcomer greeter. And I thought, oh my goodness, who are these nice ladies who keep ringing me? What do they want? What do they want? What do I give them in return? And they said, nothing in return. Helping you helps me. And so gradually, my wall started to come down a little bit. And I was like, okay, th there's something here. Like, these people have something amazing. And I want that. So I kept coming. And after a few weeks, a fellow who really helped me in the beginning said, I started asking her about sponsorship. How do I find a sponsor? And she said, you need to go to the £100 meeting. And I was like, oh, when's that? So she kind of like gently, not so gently, forced me in this direction. And I remember turning up at this meeting after about 3 or 4 weeks in fellowship, skirting around the edges, I came here. And that was it. I remember going to newcomer breakout room after this meeting and somebody kind of scooping me up and saying, I'll call you tomorrow. And I thought, oh, I could ask this lady to sponsor me, but I'd already kind of figured out that she was a woman of kind of quite some deep faith. And I thought, oh, well, she won't want to sponsor me because I'm an atheist. And I told her that, and she didn't seem to care. She was like, don't worry, all you need to be is willing to believe that there's a power greater than you. She said, anyway, let's sort out your abstinence. We'll worry about that later. So she called me the next day and she helped me to get abstinent. And I put the food down, and it was hard. I'm not going to lie, it was hard. And I did the steps. So I just wanted to talk a bit about doing the steps and some things that worked for me. And people do the steps in different ways, people sponsor in different ways. So it's really personal. But some things that worked for me was that I had the gift of desperation. Like, I had nowhere else to go. I think if I could have found somewhere else to go, I might have gone. To be honest, I might have gone in those early days, but there was nowhere else. I tried everything. So I was desperate, and that made me teachable. And this person had something I wanted, and I just thought, I'm just going to do what she tells me to do. And to be fair, she's still my sponsor, and she still tells me what to do, and I just listen and I do it. So I worked the steps thoroughly and quite quickly. I did them in about 4 months, I think. Did a lot of journaling, a lot of listening to podcasts. We read the big book together, and I spoke. She sent me to talk to like many different fellows about the big book. Like, can you tell me what you like about Bill's story? Can we talk about We Agnostics? Loved that chapter. We Agnostics chapter for agnostics and atheists. For me, that was a real kind of turning point on my spiritual journey. There was another point in the doctor's opinion. There's a paragraph in there about hospitalization. And I always today bring this to my sponsees because it's not impossible, but it's less likely that we need to be locked into an asylum or a hospital as described in the big book for alcoholics. But I do believe that in those early days of abstinence, we can recreate something of the hospitalization process within our own homes. And my sponsor said to me, you've told me that this disease is killing you and that you're willing to go to any length to recover. So maybe don't go out for a few weeks. And she said, if somebody told you you were dying and you needed some treatment and to make give the treatment that best chance of success, don't go out for dinner. Don't see mates, just for a few weeks. And I said, I'd do it. And she said, maybe think about doing that. So I'm not saying it has to be for everyone, but I'm just saying for me, and it was winter and there was a semi-lockdown. So, there was some ways that helped me at the time, which I counted my blessings on. But for me, I'd do that again because I'm willing to go to any lengths to not eat my trigger foods. So for about a month, I just hunkered down and cracked on with the step work. There's plenty to do in the steps, so I didn't need a load of entertainment. I just kept turning back to the steps. The other thing was, my sponsor advised me no amber gambling, no looky likies. I'm a sugar addict, absolutely 100% addicted to sugar. And she said, if you're putting down the sugar, you need to put down anything that looks or acts like sugar. So no sweeteners, no alcohol,
That's 20
no fizzy
minutes, Lee.
drinks. Thank you. And that my abstinence list of what was my red food and what was my green food wasn't a choice. It's not a choice that I get to sit and make and wonder about. No, I had to get really, really honest with myself and with my sponsor about what are the foods that I can't stop from eating. And when I start eating them, I can't stop. And when I'd identified those foods, they just went on my red list. That was it. There was no kind of bartering, negotiating with myself, with my sponsor, or with any higher power. It's like, no, they're just going on the red list. And with that, I cracked on with the steps. Again, just to come back to my kind of atheist leanings, I figured out early on that, well, I had a very important outreach with a fellow where I said, I'm struggling with the whole God thing. And she said, you're overthinking it. And I thought, okay, I'm an overthinker. I accept that. And she said, do you grow your own hair? And I said, no. She said, do you grow your own nails? Do you grow your nails? And I said, no. She said, well, there you are. There's a power greater than you that's growing your hair and growing your nails. End of. That's it. That's all you need to know. And I was like, oh, that was like a light bulb moment. I was like, well, if that's where I can start there. And again, check back in We're Agnostics because it says we were relieved to know that we could begin on a simpler level. And there was my simple level. I don't grow my own hair. And then I started to think about the weeds growing through the cracks in my balcony on my very built up inner city South London balcony, four floors above a main road. And I was like, well, that's certainly a power greater than me because we try to stop nature and she somehow finds her way through. And I have a whole story about goddesses and witches and going to Glastonbury. And if anyone wants to talk about divine feminine, hit me up for some outreach. But I think that's for another day. But the main thing I wanted to say was that I let go of the certainty of atheism. There was a certainty in atheism, a comfort, like I can be sure there's nothing there. And quite simply, I just let go of that. I don't know what's there. I'm just willing to believe there's a power greater than me. And then something really, really magical happened in step 8 and 9 for me, because I had a lot of mess to clear up, a real lot of mess. And remember, I said that like things had really hit the fan in 2021, and a good friend of mine had boundaried, said I was out of her life. I needed to make amends to her. And so I'd done the work in step 4 and 5. She was on my amends list. And I said to my sponsor, I need to respect her boundary. I can't make a direct amend. And my sponsor listened to me. She said, yeah, I agree. She said, write a letter to her. I will hear it. So you do something symbolic. I'll hear the letter. So I did that. I wrote the letter. By this stage, I hadn't spoken to her for about a year and a half. And a week after I read the letter to my sponsor, she called me on a Sunday morning at 9 a.m. I almost didn't answer. I was like, no, I'm in recovery. I can answer. So I answered and she said, oh, did I call you or did you call me? And I said, oh, you called me, but we don't have to speak. And she said, I was out for a jog and I was out of breath and you're still the emergency contact in my phone. And I think it was by accident. And I said, it's okay. And she said, but let's speak. She said, I think somewhere your ancestors and my ancestors got together and said, let's get these sisters together. And I could never have engaged around ancestors. And in that moment, I thought there has never been a truer word said to me. And I was able to make my amends to that friend. And it took a while. It hasn't been easy. But after a few weeks, we met and I was able to make a fuller amends. And today, we're rebuilding our friendship, a healthier friendship, not codependent. We have boundaries. We respect each other's space, but we're rebuilding our relationship. And that's why I believe in a power greater than myself, because That couldn't have happened without some intervention of the ancestors or something. And I couldn't have been abstinent. The other thing is, I could not have been abstinent for the 3.5 years that I have lived one day at a time, abstinent from my trigger foods, without a power greater than me, because I had tried literally everything within my power and I couldn't stop eating. And I haven't eaten those foods for 3.5 years. So today, my life, it sounds cliched, but it is beyond my wildest dreams. I didn't know this was possible for me. But I just wanted to say that it's not been an easy ride in recovery. And I'm nearly 47 now, and which is fine. I'm loving this age. And at the same time, starts to throw up some issues. I mean, sisters of my age and maybe a bit older, can we talk about perimenopause and menopause? Because seriously, in the last year, my memory's gone. It's really scary when suddenly things that we relied on, like memory, like decent sleep, that's been taken away from me. And I've put a bit of weight on without changing my food plan. And these things are not easy to navigate. And in the past, of course, I would have turned to food. I don't have food. A year ago, I had my gallbladder removed, and there were quite serious complications around the operation, and I was in and out of hospital for a few weeks. And the year before that, we had a fire in our block of flats, and me and my son saw our home on fire. And then we've lived behind scaffolding for 2 years, and there's been some real struggles with our housing association about many things. So I'd say, like, the 3 years that I've been in recovery have in many ways been some of the most challenging in my life, and I haven't eaten on them. And I haven't eaten by staying spiritually well and staying in the middle of the herd. So every day I just work my program. I put it above everything, like literally above everything, because I know that anything I try to put above my program, I lose. Like, I won't be the mum that I'm here to be if I constantly put my son above my recovery work. He actually gets my love and a recovered mum because I put my recovery first. So to do that, my favorite time of day is 6 a.m. I get up, I do my journaling, I do two-way prayer to whatever, to the trees, to the moon, to the ocean, to the goddess. It varies. For me, it's about stepping out my head, sinking into my heart, and creating space to just hear that there's a space for me where, like, my heart meets the universe, and that's where there's some inner wisdom. And when I live guided by that inner wisdom and that power that is indeed way greater than me, my life goes with the flow. Like, I make good decisions. God gave us brains to use. So I also try to get to a meeting every day. I sponsor, I keep in touch with my sponsor. I do service at a couple of meetings a week, and also just dropping into me, like arriving at meetings and asking if there's any service needed. And I just try to stay active in my recovery, active in fellowship, and to make space for that prayer and meditation. And there's nothing natural about prayer for me. It's not something that I'd ever done. And so I found my way with that through writing and with two-way prayer. And by that, I literally mean, what shall I do about this? Take a few deep breaths, have a bit of silence, listen to a bit of music, and then I write whatever comes back to mind through that. Whatever just comes to me, I write it down and then see what's there. And usually there's some real nuggets or pearls of wisdom from deep within or deep above that guide me in my day. So yeah, I think that's probably about what I wanted to say. And just to kind of reiterate, any newcomers, I'm so happy that you're here. There can be lots of things to get our heads around when we first arrive in OA, lots of terms, lots of literature, and we've got the rest of our lives to keep dipping into it. The big book is like the gift that keeps giving. I can just open that book on any page and find something relevant and wise. And it's okay that maybe I didn't understand that bit the first time, or maybe I skipped through it. I mean, that chapter to wives, I was like, what is this now? But you know what? I've read it again since. I've been to big book meetings. I'm like, there's so much in that chapter, actually, when I read again or when I read this paragraph.
That's quite 9 minutes.
Thank you. You don't have to kind of understand everything straight away, but reaching out, talking to fellows, that's the other thing I do, at least 2 outreach calls every day. So I will put my number in the chat, and if anyone would like to add me to their outreach list, I'd be really grateful for calls. But yeah, just staying connected with fellowship. So yes, thank you again for inviting me. Super, super grateful to be here and really looking forward to hearing from some of you today as well. And I will pass. Thank you.